Blog Talk Radio.
I feel silence. You feel drifting on by. You feel it's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling.
Yes, yes, yes. None other than Nina Simone. And of course, we also heard, I don't know if you could tell, but that was also Lauryn Hill in the background there. Felt like playing that, of course, New Dawn, New Day is what they said, and feeling good. And yeah, we are feeling good. We hear that our freedom fighter, Dr. Motula Shakur is going to be free very, very soon. We got that news yesterday and definitely feeling good. I mean, of course, what more can we say? Dr. Motula Shakur is going to be free. You know, it just goes to show you that no matter what, we've got to continue to fight always. Because if they would have had it their way, he would have died inside of there, just like many of the others who did die inside. We must always continue to fight for the freedom of our freedom fighters, our political prisoners. Welcome, family. Welcome to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. It's been a crazy kind of week. We had some problems getting in for a little while there, but we are here now. Again, it's been a very, very interesting kind of week, kind of day, kind of week. And certainly, if you're on the East Coast, well, this is really some interesting kind of weather, or shall I say climate. For those who don't believe in climate change or whatever, I don't know, something's going on, because here we are almost mid-November, and there was like 66, and in some cases earlier this week, 70, past 70. Now, y'all know that's not something that we're used to having on the East Coast side, but there it is. And I'm not complaining. Let me just tell you, I'm definitely not complaining because I'm not, you know, one of them bunnies. So, you know, what weather works for me. But anyway, family, moving right along. Again, we thank you all for tuning in for this segment of New Day. And want to remind you that, you know, again, with Dr. Motula Shakur coming home, certainly it should encourage us even more to focus on Mumia Abu-Jamal. The next trial date is coming up, hearing, shall I say. And, you know, they're talking about, I think it's what, December the 16th, I believe it is. So, you know, definitely we've got to do all that we can do in regards to Mumia Abu-Jamal. He certainly can be free. And, you know, again, with Dr. Motula coming home, that should encourage us even more so to do that. Want to share with everyone, for those who don't know, some of what's getting ready to happen for the future. You know, the movement has been infiltrated for as long as we can remember, even going back to, of course, the Honorable Marcus Garvey. We have COINTELPRO. Acts in place then. They didn't call it that, but certainly that is what it was. On December the 10th, we plan to be at the United Nations for a rally, no matter how big, no matter how small, to at least put on record that COINTELPRO, there has to be an indictment, a people's indictment of COINTELPRO. This is how Dr. Motula, this is how Mumia, this is how all of our people that we know of who have been incarcerated for their political activities, things that they said, things that they supposedly have done, they were all under surveillance, all under the COINTELPRO orchestration, et cetera, and so there has to be a statement made publicly in such a way that we make it very clear that, you know, COINTELPRO was, in fact, and certainly it still exists today, it might be a different name, but it was definitely called COINTELPRO Counterintelligence Program years ago. And we're saying that, that was a human rights violation, that that was a form of genocide. And so there are 21 areas of human rights violations that we're citing. COINTELPRO is one of them. And, of course, that did, in fact, lead to what we call today our political prisoners. And so on December 10th, we plan to be in New York to do a rally and, again, to put on record that there is an indictment, a people's indictment, as it pertains to COINTELPRO, this government. A segment of this government did, in fact, engage in not only illegal, not only murder, not only setups, but certainly what is known as human rights violations. That has to be put on the record. And of course, there are others who have already done that. But, you know, again, we want to do it in such a way now that it connects to our We Charge Genocide 21 campaign. With that said, before we go more into talking about Dr. Mutulu Shakur, I'm going to play something for everyone to just give you an idea as to why we've got to tell our own stories. And so as we proceed with MWM, others, we're really working towards establishing our own kinds of networks to a greater extent so that we can educate our people. Of course, Brother Ray Ray and Sister Keisha and Brother Mike, Brother Lee and others are doing excellent, excellent jobs in educating our people with history and other kinds of information. We have to do even more, even better. And I'll tell you why I'm saying that very soon. I got a chance to listen to something the other night, which was real interesting. But I'm going to play something now that tells you why we've got to be even more diligent in providing information to our people. This is a report that you can find on YouTube, and it talks about the infiltration that the government set up when they were actually looking for Dr. Mutulu Shakur. But it goes to, you know, even though this talks about when they were attempting to find him, this just gives you more insight into the kind of stuff that they were already doing even before any of this happened. But I want you to pay attention to this. Now, note, this was, 30 years ago or something? Oops, hold on. Let me get rid of that. Oh, shucks. I had it already queued up, and now I've lost it. Hold on, family. I got to go back to it again. There we go. Let's try that again. Okay. Check this out. Give me one moment. I'm trying to get it queued up for you. Okay. What do we got here? Okay. Now it's not queuing up. Great, great, great. All right. Let's try it one more time. Oh, shucks. Okay. All right. Now it's not queuing up for me. Okay. Maybe. All right. Here we go. Let's try it now.
On the streets. Once again, the operating informant Sam Brown provided agents with a lead. He believed Mutulu Shakur could most likely be found in Harlem at the acupuncture clinic Shakur had founded. The FBI and NYPD set up 24-hour surveillance. We utilized agents and detectives of diverse ethnic backgrounds to do our best to blend into certain neighborhoods. We knew from both experience and also recognizing the intelligence and versatility of this group that we had to be particularly discreet in surveilling these individuals. Agents watched and listened for months. So Shakur never showed. We noted several others and came and went quite often. Agents hoped they would eventually lead to Shakur. One night, agents followed a man from the clinic to a house at 85 Bound Street in Greenwich Village. They learned the house was rented to Edward Joseph, one of the suspects named by informant Sam Brown in the Nyack robbery shootout. They suspected Shakur was hiding there. They were right. Their months of perseverance had paid off. The federal judge authorized a Title III, She's permitted agents to set up wiretaps in buckets. Shakur and Joseph must have suspected the FBI's presence, since they often turned up the TV when they talked. Despite this, agents were able to pick up snippets of incriminating conversations, including a discussion of killing informant Sam Brown. After several weeks, agents had enough evidence for a warrant to raid the Greenwich Village hideout. On the night of March 25, 1982, 6 months since the murders and robbery in Nyack, agents prepared for the assault. They'd strike early the next morning, hoping to catch the fugitives asleep and unaware. As the agents watched and waited, they saw Shakur enter the house. At dawn, two SWAT teams arrived. One team entered through the front door. The other covered the fire escape and back. They arrested two men, Chewy Ferguson and Edward Joseph, both named as participants in the night. Their leader, Matulu Shakur, was nowhere to be found. Somehow, he'd escaped during the night, slipping past the surveillance. Ferguson and Joseph were convicted on federal charges as accessories for harboring the fugitive, though they were acquitted of murder charges stemming from the Nyack shootings. Both were sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Okay, now that, of course, was their story. And if you listen to it, you got to go, okay, really? I mean, it, certain things in there was just like so, you know, almost crazy, to be honest with you. But the thing that the few things that I did find very interesting when I listened to that was, of course, now two brothers, of course, were given 12 years for supposedly harboring a fugitive. For 12 years, that's what they got. 12 years for harboring a fugitive. That was very interesting. The other thing was Dr. Matul Shakur managed to slip away in the night with all these people watching and all the surveillance and stuff going on. He had the opportunity to slip away. So my point, family, is this. You know, you have to really understand how and why things are the way that they are. You know, if we do not make certain that we tell our story ourselves, the information or misinformation that's put out there is going to be as such where the masses of our people are going to hear a side of things that is just, you know, just so crazy, and that puts it mildly, but more importantly, it paints a picture of a certain type. And so again, we really are going to start working even more harder to make certain that we are able to produce our own films, our own documentaries, our own music, our own everything that we possibly can. I'm going to say more about that a little later on, because that's definitely some plans being put in place, I can tell you that. Moving right along, hopefully Brother Talib will be calling in. That is Dr. Matul Shakur's son, and unfortunately his father-in-law may transition. And so the funeral is today. So, you know, of course, there's a lot going on with that side of his family. So he said he's going to really try to call, and hopefully he will. The other thing we want to remind everyone is yesterday was Nat Turner Ancestral Day. Yep, for those who do remember, of course, that is the day that Ancestor Nat Turner, was, of course, assassinated. Murdered, rather. Yes, assassinated, murdered and you know, 11/11. Yep, 11/11. It was also Veterans Day. So one of the conversations that we're going to talk about tonight is, of course, about Black veterans. And, of course, with the We Charge Genocide 21 Project, that is one of the 21 areas that we're citing. The fact that our Black veterans from the time of the Civil War up to the present day, there is genocide and crimes against them. Intentionally, you know, extreme racist, and you know, not getting what is rightfully theirs, and then of course, you know, not even be able to be around the whole army or whatever experience in the earlier days, you know, couldn't even be in the same location, et cetera, et cetera. So you know, to fight for this country, well. And then to be treated in that kind of way, again, this story must be told. So we're linking with other entities who are doing work around these kinds of issues to make certain that we're able to connect with those who are already doing it, as well as bringing, you know, our particular flavor, as they say, into the picture. So we're going to tell you more about the Black veterans, the different Black veterans groups that are out there that are doing the work. We plan to connect with them and present several forums in the next year so that you can hear about some of the work that they're doing and how we plan to connect for the future, and also to make certain that we obtain justice for them and their families. There are many veterans today who are homeless, and certainly many who have mental, you know, issues that need to be dealt with. And then there are some who just haven't even gotten the kind of medical treatment or care that they should have gotten over the years. So we want to bring attention to all of those kinds of things. So it's definitely coming. Okay, in the meantime, what I'd like to do is open up the mic for you all and kind of get some ideas and opinions from you about a couple of things. For example, Nat Turner, where's our Nat Turners today? Well, for those who do not know, apparently the brother who started the group Not Effing Around, I think it's called, he was sentenced this past week. And if I remember correctly, he was sentenced to like 12 years, something like that. Jam Master Jay, I think his name is. Anyway, I'd like to know from you all, where's our Nat Turners today? Or if not Nat Turners, where are our freedom fighters? Where are our freedom fighters today that represent in such a way as Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad or Malcolm X or others? Who would we be fighting today? Who do we think has that kind of spirit, that kind of representation? So I'd like for you to, you know, chime in and give me your opinion about who you think in this day and age represents the best interests of Black people in the same way of a Nat Turner, or if not a Nat Turner, again, of Malcolm X or El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. Press one now, and again, I'd like to hear your opinion. Also, while we're waiting for that, a 22-year-old sister was shot 17 times by cops in North Carolina in July. Did you hear about this? I surely didn't, and I definitely try to, you know, stay abreast of certain things, but didn't hear about that one. So the question is, why? Why did we not hear about this? Well, I have my opinion, but again, from reading the reports, apparently she was having a mental situation, and, you know, the cops came. And when you hear the story, I'm going to read some of it to you. This was in Fayetteville, North Carolina. The story sounds real fishy to me, and
I'm gonna read some of it shortly and kind of get an idea as to what how you think or what you might think about it. But I just found it to be a little strange. This young sister was named Jada Johnson, and again, she was 22 years of age. She was a mother. And the reports, of course, indicate or says that she had some pills in her purse, and the autopsy supposedly conveyed or said that she had some methamphetamine in her system. So with that said, right, I'm going to read a little bit to you about the case or about the situation, and I want to know what you all think. Okay, it says new details emerge in the death of North Carolinian shot by cops 17 times. All righty, let's hold on a minute. Let me pull this back up some more. Okay, here we go. A 22-year-old North Carolina woman was shot 17 times in front of her grandparents and 2-year-old daughter after police officers responded to a possible break-in. Jada Johnson also had drugs. Now, note, this is the second sentence, right? Let me go back to this. A 22-year-old North Carolina woman was shot 17 times in front of her grandparents and 2-year-old daughter after police officers responded to a possible break-in. Jada Johnson also had drugs in her system at the time she was killed at her grandfather's home in Fayetteville, North Carolina, on July 1st. According to an autopsy and toxicology reports released on Tuesday. Now, that's this Tuesday this was released. She was killed in July, but they're saying now the autopsy report was released this past Tuesday. One bullet entered the right side of Johnson's head, injuring her scalp, brain, and skull. The report revealed a second gunshot entered a depression and a skull fracture, or created a depression and skull fracture. The young woman also sustained multiple gunshot wounds to her right forearm, right arm, shoulder, and right hip and torso. The report confirmed that the manner of Johnson's death was a homicide. They wrote this. I didn't write this. Okay. The toxicology report, which was also released Tuesday, also revealed that Johnson was under the influence of 0.25 milligrams of methamphetamines and had been in possession of unknown pills that were found in a plastic bag on her person, Fox News reported. Hold on, let me scroll down a little bit. Okay, they have pictures of the cops here. So, okay. The harrowing ordeal started just before 10 p.m. on July 1st in Fayetteville. Police arrived at the home of Johnson's grandparents. Rick Awoski. Now, that kind of threw me. If I didn't see her picture, this sister's picture, I would have thought it was a white girl. But it's definitely not the picture of a white girl. But her grandfather's name is Rick Iwaski, located in Colgate Drive. Officers were responding to a call about a possible break-in. Iwaski said his daughter suffered from mental illness and had recently been released from the hospital after experiencing a mental health crisis. She thought that they were here to kill her, and they wound up murdering her right in front of us, the distraught grandfather said. I saw her face and her eyes, he said, as he wept, CBS 17 reported. He also said that his granddaughter was trying to get out of an abusive relationship on the night of her tragic murder. He said the granddaughter believed her boyfriend was trying to get inside their home to kill her. Okay. She thought the boyfriend was there to kill her, Iwaski said, threatened to kill herself, the news outlet reported. One officer tackled Johnson to the ground as another shot her multiple times in front of Iwaski, her grandmother, and two-year-old daughter. Officers gained control of the handgun, at which point the struggle went to the ground, and tragically, officers discharged their firearm. Fayetteville Police Department Assistant Chief James Naletta said, as reported on Fox 8. After the incident, officers Zacharias Borun and Sergeant Timothy Rugg were put on paid administrative leave as the investigation in the manner was underway. But Johnson's grandfather, who witnessed the incident, disputes the police. The officers were not threatened verbally. Yes, there was a gun, but it was down, Iwaski said. He said there was an opportunity for officers to stop the situation without deadly force. When she put the gun down, they should have tased her, beanbagged her, took her down. Why didn't they do this? Iwaski asks. Okay, so I'm gonna leave it at there. The point here is, okay, so this young sister, 22 years of age, apparently had been released very recently, if not the day before, from an institution. Apparently did have a gun, but as the grandfather says, the gun was down, put away when they shot her, right? My point is this, because this whole story just sounds real strange when I was reading it. And, she was shot 17 times, right? I don't know, family. Again, first of all, did any of you hear about this story? I'm just curious. Secondly, now that you have heard it, does it sound kind of strange to you? Or not strange, well, needless to say it's strange because this young sister is dead. But the point is the way that they're telling it, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier about us making sure that we tell our own stories. The way this story is being spun, what are your thoughts in hearing what you just heard? Something definitely is not being said here. I'm used to hearing reports that are not, putting in the information that should be there. And so the point is, it sounds like there's a cover up here. If you are familiar with listening to different reports and different kind of information, this right here certainly is an example of something that needs to be said that's not being said. And I think the grandfather is hitting on it. But of course they're going to say he's old or some stuff and, didn't really understand or see stuff. Anyway, family, again, I would love to know what your thoughts are, what your opinions are. You can press one now. And again, I'm really kind of curious as to knowing, is this a story that any of you heard? And now that you have heard it, what is your thoughts about it? Okay. All right, so, again, you can press one now, and I would love to hear your comments about it, okay? All right. Nobody has any thoughts about it, no comments about it. Wow, okay. It's one of those kind of nights. All right, not a problem. All right, so listen, I'm going to do this. Since we are talking about political prisoners tonight and, of course, the release of Dr. Mutulu, I'm going to go to one of the latest commentaries on Mumia Abu-Jamal. Maybe some of you might have some thoughts after you hear this.
TV snake oil salesman and Republican Pennsylvania candidate Mehmet Oz began a recent debate with opponent John Fetterman with reference to Maureen Faulkner, the widow of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner. Fetterman, Oz claimed, quote, has been trying to get as many murderers convicted and sentenced to life in prison out of jail as possible, including people who are similar to the man who murdered her husband, close quote. You could live in a cave and understand what Oz was trying to do there, but not everyone may recognize the particular dog whistle that is the reference to Mumia Abu-Jamal, convicted of fatally shooting Daniel Faulkner in 1983. That was the conviction. Mumia Abu-Jamal's conviction turned importantly on unreliable and conflicting testimony. It was significant that in taking up the case, elite news media went along for the ride and sometimes drove the car, encouraging acceptance, for instance, of the fact that though the guard assigned to Mumia immediately after his arrest reported, quote, the Negro male made no statements, close quote, more to be believed was the other officer who subsequently came forward to say that actually from his hospital bed, Mumia had declared, quote, I shot the motherfucker and I hope he dies, close quote. Neither witness recantations or shifting accounts or evidence of jury purging in Mumia's case, nor the ever-expanding evidence of the terrible harms and injustices of the U.S. prison system generally, seem to be enough to shake some media from their investment in the narrative of the, quote, convicted cop killer, close quote, and the need to keep him not just behind bars, but also to keep him and people similar to him quiet, to keep their voices and their lives out of public conversation and consideration. Noelle Hanrahan is legal director at Prison Radio, where Mumia Abu-Jamal is lead correspondent. She joins us now by phone from Pennsylvania. Welcome back to Counterspin, Noelle Hanrahan.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we can fill in context as we go, but please go ahead and start with what's uppermost. What is the latest legal development here?
When a defendant is trying to overturn their conviction, and Mumia has been in for 42 years, when they protest their innocence, they have to go to the local trial court. That in Philadelphia is the common pleas court. Mumia had fantastic new critical evidence that was just discovered 2 years ago. There was a note in the prosecutor's files that said, where was my money, from one of the key defendants? And this happened right after the trial, implying that he was paid for his testimony. There were also notes saying that the other key witness, their cases were being tracked, and that none of the outstanding charges pending against this witness were ever prosecuted. The most dramatic evidence was evidence of taking blacks off of the jury and marks on the prosecutor's notes about the racial composition of the jury and also what was good and bad about which jury was selected, which juror, a white or a black juror. These were critical documents that many other people have gotten relief on. The jury notes are called Batson claims, the U.S. constitutional claim. The suppression of evidence by the prosecution, burying evidence for 40 years, is called a Brady claim. These have gotten relief from many other defendants. So now, 42 years later, Mumia Abu-Jamal was before Judge Lucretia Clemens in the Commons Police Court, and yesterday she denied all of his claims. She denied them procedurally. She refused to look at the merits of the body of evidence, and specifically this new evidence, and she denied it based on time bar, waiver, due diligence, and it's just like, it's the Post-Conviction Relief Act, which is there only to deny inmates access to the court. So I was Mumia's producer. I've worked on Mumia with his books, many of his books, including his latest trilogy, Murder Incorporated, Empire, Genocide, and Manifest Destiny. We published those materials. About 5 years ago, I went to law school. I passed the bar in Pennsylvania. And it's unbelievable to see the level of stiff-arming accountability to the Frank Rizzo, Ed Rendell, Juan Castillo era of literal torture of defendants and witnesses, like literally torture, not figuratively, literally. Think John Birch in Chicago.
Right.
Like think of the types of torture that have happened. That is typically what happened in the cases that I now investigate, innocence cases, prosecutorial misconduct cases, cases where this kind of information is available to these judges. I'll give you one clear example. One of the key witnesses, Robert Coburn, he was a cab driver driving without a license. He was on probation. He had thrown a Molotov cocktail into a school for pay. None of that material was before the jury. Pictures. He said he was right behind the police car. He saw yesterday the district attorney in this case, Grady Gravino, on the other side, said, Robert Schober looked up from his cab and saw Mumia shoot the officer. There are pictures that just came out a few years ago from the Philadelphia Bulletin that prove that were taken 10 minutes after the shooting, that prove that Robert Schober wasn't there. His cab was not behind the police car. Those photographs, the Polycarp photos, were denied in death evidence. They were prevented from being put into the record. So we have Robert Schober being presumed to be this like amazing witness with no problem. Literally, the photos prove he wasn't there, and nobody was able to be told to the jury that he was on probation.
Okay, so we had a slight little glitch there. I wonder why. But anyway, family, you did hear some of the report. That was Noelle Hammerhan, who, as she mentioned, I don't know if you heard her mention, she worked on several of Mumia's books over the years. The key thing is that all of what was introduced was, you know, turned down in this last situation, I believe it was October 26th. And so there is another hearing. The judge did give the lawyers the opportunity to come back into court for December the 16th, and they are to bring additional evidence / information. Now, what you heard earlier, of course, in this particular with this particular report that we just heard, you know, the lawyers introduced the new evidence that was recently found over these past couple of years in boxes that were stored in the previous district attorney's office or somewhere thereabouts. These boxes had not been seen before by Mumia's lawyers. And so in those boxes, there was clearly information and evidence about, you know, different things, and this was introduced to this judge. So, again, we're seeing right before our eyes this so-called justice/injustice system, because supposedly if you can introduce new evidence, that is supposed to get you a new trial. Well, they did. They introduced new evidence, even where it said something about getting paid for something. So, you know, so that's enough there, obviously, but we know what's going on. So, again, this is one of the reasons why on December 10th we will be at the United Nations. And again, there are other people that are doing other things. So, you know, so it makes no sense for us to try to duplicate what other folks are doing. There's going to be other kinds of forums, other kinds of rallies, and so forth, leading up to the December 16th hearing that will be taking place here in Philadelphia. This is important. This may not be, or this may be the last shot unless something, some more new evidence or something else. This could be it. So we've got to really do everything possible now to make certain that we bring as much attention, pressure, whatever, in this situation that's coming up on December the 16th. And so, again, we plan to be at the United Nations. There are other issues that we will be citing, but we're definitely going to present the people's indictment of COINTELPRO. Now, you can sign on to this starting tomorrow if you email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and then also there should be something on our website, our We Charge Genocide website, where you can also sign up for it at, you know, again, put your name on the People's Indictment of COINTELPRO. This is very important that we make some kind of statement verbally as well as to let people see. Again, you know, I have no expectations about certain things, but that doesn't stop us from doing it. Now, note, December the 10th is the day we plan, again, to do a rally outside of the headquarters of the United Nations. We'll be doing a three-day virtual teaching and speak up prior to that. That'll be online, and we'll be giving reports from different groups, organizations about reparations, also about COINTELPRO and other kinds of things. But we need to show a physical visual to whomever, again, and that's going to be on December 10th. So from December 7th to the 9th, that'll be a virtual online We Charge Genocide Black Human Rights type of conference, teach-in, speak out. And then on the 10th, we plan to be at the United Nations. Now, December 10th is International Human Rights Day. Again, International Human Rights Day. So that's why we're selecting that, because we know what's going on the local level, meaning the jurisdiction that will be hearing this case on December 16th. But at the same time, we need to make certain that our voices, our concern is also lodged in other arenas. And so, again, it's a strategic move. It's also a way to educate folk and have more people to become more aware of the case, of the situation, and perhaps more importantly, at this point, the fact that December 16th could really be, you know, that's going to be important. You know, this could be a turning point. And given the fact that Dr. Matul Shakur just got the approval to be released, certainly, you know, this is important. It's time to get Mumia out. It's time to bring Mumia home. And so we're going to do everything we possibly can on our end, as well as others, to do so. All right, family, listen, going back to you all, we want to open up the mic and see if there's any questions or comments from you, particularly about anything that we presented so far for tonight. And, again, we kind of do open mic night tonight. We were hoping that Brother Talib would be calling in, that Dr. Matulu's son. But as I mentioned earlier, his father-in-law made transition, and the funeral was today. So, you know, there's a possibility that he will not be able to call in, you know, due to family, you know, issues and responsibilities from today. So, again, we're doing open mic. If there's anything you'd like to share, we're certainly going to give you the opportunity to do so. And also, if you have a comment on the story that I read earlier about the young sister, 22 years of age, that was shot 17 times in Fayetteville, North Carolina, in July, they just released her autopsy report that said she had some drugs in her system. And also that, you know, she has some mental issues. And again, the question is, are we looking at excessive force here? And again, I'm just concerned, why did we not hear anything about this? I know I didn't. What about you all? Did any of you hear about this story? July, this young sister, 22 years of age, was murdered, allegedly because she had a gun. And not allegedly, they actually, it was verified that she had a gun. And it was also indicated that she was in fear of her life because of an abusive relationship. So, you know, what are your thoughts, family, in hearing this particular story? And again, if there's any other thing that you'd like to share with us, again, we invite you to do so by pressing 1 now. Okay. Let's see what we got here. Wow, you all are pretty quiet tonight. I'm really concerned about that. There's no other news or stories that y'all want to share? Oh, my goodness. All right. Okay, well, anyway, moving right along. So let's see, what else do we have on our agenda for tonight? For those who are interested, tomorrow we will be back on our Zoom call for the Million Women World March. We started the organizing for that last week in terms of our national, international Zoom meetings that took place last week. It was wonderful, and so we have another one tomorrow. Please note that it won't be at 1 o'clock. It'll be at 1:30 Eastern time, and, of course, take into consideration that there's a three-hour difference. If you are in the Pacific time, one-hour difference. If the Central, and six-hour difference if you are in other parts, including Hawaii, by the way, but certainly in Africa, there's a 6 to 7 hour difference. Last week we had Cameroon, we've had Gambia, and also France, with Sister Julia Wright joining us from France. It was a wonderful, wonderful call. So I thank everyone for coming in on that particular call. Tomorrow we begin starting to organize committees. What is the Million Woman World March? Well, check it out tomorrow. If you need to get the Zoom link, you can do so by emailing us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We have a big surprise for folk. We're going to start kind of giving you some insight into some of the folks who are going to be invited to participate as speakers or presenters. This is a international program. It will also include the Global Africana Women's Power and Leadership Summit. So again, I'll just say this briefly, and it is, you know, if things are going to change, there has to be some things that is done that's different. Well, there's never been, at least not in our time, an organizing of Black women, African women throughout the diaspora to come together to focus on the various issues as women, but also as it pertains to our family and community. Never been done before. Now this is what's getting ready to happen. Sisters from all over the world are going to be able to provide reports on what's going on in their country as pertains to the women and girls. And simultaneously, what we can do as women to help bring about a better quality of life for our families and communities. This is major. And to have it come from the grassroots first, from the grassroots through the glass ceiling. This is very important because generally these kinds of things are done from circles that do not have any connection for the most part with the everyday Black woman and Black girl. So this is groundbreaking to be coming from the grassroots level, upward. And we say, again, from the grassroots through the glass ceiling. So this is going to be very, very interesting. And also, and then we're going to go to our lines. One of the projections is that for March, we hopefully will have it in March, we're looking to do a global African women's marketplace so that our women all over the world will have a centralized location where their goods and services can be accessed online. And so we're talking about, of course, the various types of crafts, you know, bags, clothing, shoes. I mean, I have such a collection, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But again, to make these things available to, you know, to anyone that wants to purchase them, this is what we've been working on. Now, interestingly enough, we've been trying to get the developer, you know, the technological developer. We've gone to two black entities to work on, you know, putting this together in terms of the marketplace online. And unfortunately, both of them have failed. I'm just shocked. I'm hoping and praying we don't have to go somewhere else. But I'm telling you right now, we went to two different, and these were very, you know, qualified entities. But for some reason, they found it very difficult, or we found it very difficult to keep them consistent in doing this project, you know. And it's not about the money. It's not that at all. It's about consistency. So anyway, I'll tell you more about that later. Let's go to our live line, and let's get some comments and thoughts. Caller, you are at 1559. And 1559, welcome to this segment of New Day. Your mic is now open.
Hey, Aunt Priscilla. It's Sister Tisha. How are you?
Hey, Sister Tisha. How you be?
Good, good. Just listening to the show and getting the information that I need. It's good to hear that Dr. Matulu Shakur is coming home, and definitely got to get Malia home.
Yes.
And I like when you pointed out how these politicians are using dog whistle comments as it relates to our people as a stepping stone in their, you know, respective political parties. They do the same thing, you know, whether it's a Democratic Party or a Republican Party. Just use black folks, and, you know, you'll slide through. But what's happening with the current political structure, and something that I have been reporting on for quite some time, is that the voting numbers continue to drop in both parties. And unlike the Republican Party, when they are approached by their constituency, they huddle back with the masses to double down and see if they can give that constituency what they want. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, has a nasty habit. When they lose, they blame black people. And that's another dog whistle. As a scare tactic to get our people back to the voting polls, because voting numbers have declined over the last 12 years rapidly. And this is one of the reasons why they are trying to, in Democratic cities, that is, in particular New York, allow illegal immigrants to vote. Vote. And what's happening here in New York, there is a group of African Americans who are in the process of suing the Board of Elections and the state of New York for allowing this to happen. And nobody is talking about this very critical case. Also here in New York, there is a group of black people who are suing both political parties for not taking reparations seriously. And this is another case that nobody's talking about. So, you know, we have to be very steadfast in our approach to what the future of this country looks like politically, and, you know, how we fit in all of this, because continuing to play the two of party systems is detrimental to us. It is a dying system that they are trying to salvage by any means necessary. You have Republicans right now who are talking about sitting down with real black leaders to discuss the issue of reparations, because that's how desperate the Republican Party is right now. So we have to be, just stay abreast of the two cases that are currently happening here in New York City. One in Staten Island, and I believe the other is in Queens, but I have to double check that again. But as far as the election case, that is in Staten Island. So I hope that, you know, that case progresses and they prevail, because it's illegal to undermine the black vote. And, it's very telling, one, where black leadership is, and two, where we are politically as a people. As far as black leadership, there is none.
Listen, you could say that, Sister Keisha, that is, now that right there, that needs to be said more often. As a matter of fact, here in Philly on Monday, we're going to be doing one of our first, what we call Black Communities United meetings. We're going to do them all over the city. See, the one thing I realize is that we have to now take serious action. And so one of the things that will happen at that meeting is we're going to start doing some polling so that our people can, say, well, how do you think your politician is doing? We want to get that kind of stuff in writing. But the other thing, too, is start looking at who we can recruit amongst us. Those that we feel either want to or can need more training or whatever. We got to start doing those kind of evaluations. So we're going to do meetings all over the city in each different part because, Philly is real cliquish, as most cities are. So we're going to go right to wherever they're at and hold these sessions right in that community or right in that part of Philly so that we can now, have our own what we call the Black Communities United City Council or Community Council, our own community mayors, things of that nature. I mean, this is what we got to do because you're right, Sister Keisha. We don't have any real representation, leadership, and it ain't going to happen unless we make it happen. That's just the bottom line. And lastly, though, I go back to you. Last Sunday, we introduced our candidate for president. Last Sunday. We sure did. I mean, why not? I mean, with all the stuff these people talking, at least we can say something different. So we introduce our candidate, Dr. Carlita Atwater, is running for president. Okay.
That's what's up.
That's right.
That's what's up. Because those who came before us with real leadership, we are losing them. And it's unfortunate that, and we have to tell the truth in order to fix the problems that we have. Those of the baby boomer generation, not all, but those who were in leadership in various organizations did not pass on to Gen X at all.
That's right.
And those organizations are dead. And I always used to say this, an organization without a youth component is already dead.
Yes.
And that's a serious problem. They fell into dictatorship mode. And that's for a myriad of reasons. It's not all bad. But it has to be discussed openly so that we can fix the problem. Now, today...
But Sister Keisha, hold that point for one moment. Did you get a chance by any chance to listen to... There was a meeting at Howard University a few days ago. I think I sent it to you. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it. It was Ron Daniels' group and the reparations folk, and they had like three, maybe four young folks. Going to your point, what
what Negropeans do is they always have a youth component or a younger component, right? Because let me tell you, they was pushing. You hear me? Pushing Tamika Mallory. They gave her more time than anybody to speak. It was amazing to me. Everyone else, they were cutting off at the three-minute period. But with her, they would let her go on and on and on. And lastly, and I'm going to come back to you, but I want to make this clear to everyone. One of the things that she said was that, and I'm paraphrasing, that there's criticism about, you know, what she wear and how much money she makes. And she made it very clear that she works hard for her money and she needs to get paid well for her intellectual property. And they were all like, yes, yes, yes. I mean, all this whole panel, all of them. You know, my point is that movement now, I don't care what the age is, movement now has become a game of money, and I call it pimpery, right? It is, and now it's so acceptable. In fact, it's expected. And Sister Keisha, you sent me something, of course, recently, you know, with her and George Soros, which, you know, I now found out even some more. I'll share with you later about that because I'm want to get some stuff in writing. But my point is that these people now have taken our movement, have taken our ancestors' blood, sweat, and tears, and lastly, they are good at what they do. They are so well-polished in what they do and how they do it. They know the language. They know all little nuances and so forth. But let me, it's about money. And lastly, the pushing of these parties, I mean, the way that they are able to make it seem like, well, you know, we're going to hold the Democrats accountable. It's a game of the lesser of two evils. That's what we're dealing with, the lesser of two evils. Well, you can't vote for the Republican Party because, you know, they're just outright racist all in your face with it. So go with the Democratic Party because they're racist. But at least they won't kill you right in your face. And that's what we're dealing with. And again, whoever has the highest, who the highest bidder, there it is. You know, there it is. But go ahead, Sister Keisha.
Yeah, it's funny you brought up Tamika Mallory, this dope fiend. But, and I got to say that. That's what she said. She was addicted to opioids, not me. She said
right.
That. So, and you have to look where she was raised. She was raised under National Action Network. You know, her parents was heavy contributors in National Action Network. But then, like you said, where did National Action Network get its initial dollars from? That came from Roger Stone. Now, what is, you got to ask yourself, what is Al Sharpton doing with Roger Stone at that time? So, again, you know, everything falls in line. You started out talking about COINTELPRO and how they infiltrate our movement and have been doing so for quite some time. So you were right and exact on that. And Tamika Mallory is no different. She is no different. Now, I do agree that, you know, you should be taken care of when you are doing work for the people, and the people should take care of you, not George Soros and you dictating and a narrative for someone else disguised as Black power. That's a problem for me. You know, she has a myriad of problems. But for everybody who was out there championing her and Tutu, and you was out there following a dope fiend. So good luck with that. But it falls right in line with today we went to a viewing of Wakanda Forever. So I'm not going to give no details about the film or anything like that because, you know, people may want to see it.
Yes.
It falls right in line with what you were just saying. Aspects of the film showed or depicted the need for Black women worldwide to come together and get it done. And I always said that once the sisters get it together, the jig is up for everybody.
That's right.
And that's pretty much a common thread throughout the film, without giving anything away, that is one of the common threads. In particular, the United States, the continent, and Haiti, in particular. But also the fact that, and I see a lot of people in their feelings about this film, in their feelings about the Woman King, especially from a lot of our brothers, unfortunately. Get out of your feelings. Because if your way was the right way, we wouldn't be in this situation. So start from there before you talk to me about anything. And, and most people don't, because they know my scholarship, I will embarrass you. So don't.
Real talk.
And get you have to get out of your feelings about that. And there is a common thread with this movie, The Woman King, that if sisters can deal with their mental oppression, because a lot of us are dealing with that and it must be brought to heal. If we can deal with that mental oppression, sky is the limit on what
That's
we can
right.
do with our enemies,
right.
because they are that weak and they understand the power of the Black woman. They understand that. This is why Black women are degraded in such a way by everybody. Even when you look at bill of sales, right? Because shout out to Dr. Harrell again. But when you look at bill of sales for enslaved Africans, it was always a higher bill of sale for Black females, in particular young Black females. Why? Because they could produce more. Than a Black man. Yeah, a Black man can work longer and harder, but he cannot give you a better return on your dollar the way the Black female could, because, again, she can produce children. She can work the house and the field. She can wet nurse, you know, white babies and so on and so forth that men just cannot do. And so even if you're a Christian and you look at the Bible text itself, the need to suppress stories like Lilith are very telling. And a lot of times I say to our brothers, although you wish to fight this oppression, although you may have the right spirit and the right mind and fortitude to do so, unless you shake this disease that you have to emulate the white man, you are going to fail. You are going to fail. And this is why when you look at all the wars leading up until our demise, going up into the 1500s, from the 700s A.D. all the way up, you can look and see that there was a common thread that all felt that they could emulate this white man and still win. You can't. And if you understand the premise, the thread of the Woman King and Wakanda Forever, and I have to say I did like Black Panther better as far as, you know, action and fight scenes and things of that nature. I think that was a better film. But with Wakanda Forever, the thread is the same. The thread is the same. And we have to understand where we're at in war. You have to go back to the beginning. You have to go back. For example, and I'm going to cut it off here. You have the first humans. Found the first and oldest humans found on the planet were Black females. Right? Whether it was in Ethiopia, whether it was in Sudan, or whether it was in South Africa, these are the three oldest fossil remaining sites, right?
That's right.
Black females. But they did not find any literature. They did not find any text with those Black females. So what that tells me is that whatever came after them is man-made. because you found no text with them.
That's
they
right.
found certain artifacts, right? Certain tools they found with one, certain dishes they found with another. They found no text. So any text that can, and their fossil remains are before the oldest Nubian empire, right? So that means everything that came after the oldest female found on the planet was man-made. And if it is man-made, is it just for us? Is it correct for us to follow? I think not. I think not. Because if these three fossils, the oldest on the planet, all female, what does that tell you? The is God or the right hand of God, period. Because everything else came after her, everything. So when you look at these films, you have to understand the context of our history and the stories that Hollywood is trying to tell you, right? And you pick up those common threads as you watch The Woman King and you look at Wakanda Forever. It becomes clear. They have a general fear of black women getting together.
That's right.
There is
That's
a
right.
general hate.
Yeah.
There is a general underlining hate that if we get it together, they cannot maintain power as it is. So, you know, a lot of people talking about they ain't going to see the film. And it's always this context where we are concerned. But you will go see another fiction film that has nothing to do with black people and be all right with it. I mean, it's crazy. People in the ideology are crazy to me. And that's what I'm saying. Get your mental in order. But just understand that common thread when you're watching that film.
One other thing, though, just for point of clarity, we have to also throw in there, because you said the white man, we got to also throw in there the Arab. Okay, because unfortunately
a
lot of our
brothers. See, I wasn't trying to get away the film
now. See, I wasn't trying to get away the film. Oh, no. I didn't even see it yet. So I wasn't saying it from that.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay. So
I was saying it based on. No, I didn't even see it yet. I'm taking my grandbaby. But the reason why I said that was because with the various religions, the mindset that some of our men have adopted is more Arab oriented. And so when you were saying, you know, that our men got to come out of the white frame of mind and thinking also the Arab frame of mind, which is starting to really, you know, kind of dominate some stuff in certain circles, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
So I'm seeing a form of oppression with our sisters that have become so acceptable under the guise of religion. And it's a part of, you know, the whole program. So no, I didn't even see the movie yet. I was referring to what I see every day.
Okay. Well, you read a line. Arab, you got people who out here thinking they Buddhist and all kind of stuff and taking on identities that are foreign. And when you take on identities that are foreign, you lose because the originator of those texts and doctrines know how to defeat you. And that's what they've always done with black people. Even today, in right now, modern times, you have that Vladimir Putin say to all African leaders, they don't know how powerful they are, but they so addicted to whiteness that they can't see. This is what Putin said recently. So definitely, you're right. You know, we take on different ideologies and expect those things to work for us. It cannot. And so, you know, I would employ everybody who's listening, get involved where you're at, in your communities, in your families, you got family members who ain't writing head, who, you know, who's going left field with it. So right there in your families, you know, do that work. But as you said earlier, we have to have serious planning sessions. That's something that me and the guys were talking about today, to bring that back, but in a modern text, in a modern way,
sure.
so that it is palatable for our Gen Z is out here, because I know you saw the message that Minister Farrakhan relayed last week,
yep.
I believe, for Kyrie and Kanye.
Yep.
But, you know,
yep.
Ye was very disappointed in some of the things that he said. You know, again, taking on that text or taking
yeah.
on the ideology of other folks, he disrespected
yeah.
him. And Ye didn't
yeah.
like that at all. He said, I want to have
I
a full conversation with you. That's
yes,
right. Because you're wrong and you're out of pocket. I told you.
Yep.
You baby boomers is going to get pulled up on because people not playing no more. Because we dying out here for real. And you can say what you want. Kanye, we know he off. We know he off.
Right.
He
right.
told you himself that the movie, what is that, with the sunken place? I forget. But he said that was about him. That's what he's saying. So now, you know, they saying, you know, that he's bipolar, he's this, that, and the third.
Right,
and now he's
right.
talking about
mm-hmm.
things that they don't like how they sacrificed his mother and
right.
other people. And he calling people out by name. And this is very dangerous
yeah.
for a lot of people who are under the gut, because right now, all those people who spoke out against Kyrie, you haven't seen any activity on their social media right now, because in that world, in that meta world, they are being destroyed. Shaq, Barkley, LeBron James,
yeah.
all of them
yeah.
are being destroyed online right now. So, you know, they pretty much hush us, but you don't see mainstream media talking about that, you know. So I'm going to continue
wow.
to listen to the show.
All right.
Until
sister,
you're
give
off the air and chill out.
Good thing to remind
we'll
folks
be back.
Again
we'll
they
be
can
back
tune in. Yeah,
Thursday.
I was just getting ready to say
we'll
that.
Be back
now, tell them what time.
8 to 10 p.m.
Tell
you can catch us live
yep.
on YouTube, Facebook, and on Twitch. We will have a special guest, a hip-hop legend, on this week, and we will also be discussing certain points of the film Wakanda Forever. The three of us went
mm-hmm.
to see it together.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we have Marcia, Sister Marcia, with us as well. So we went to all went to see it today, and
okay.
we got some feedback from the community. So stay tuned on Thursday.
All right, Sister Keisha in the house. Thank you, sis. All right, I just wanted to say one other thing in regards to what Sister Keisha just mentioned, and make this very clear. You know, making this move and connecting with our sisters in the continent is a critical move, and it's a very strategic one because, again, what we're not paying closer attention to is the kind of imagery that our women and girls are getting outside of the U.S. about us and about other things. And so if we do not begin to, you know, be with them, show them, share with them who we are, what we are about, then other folks' representation, opinions, and so forth gets, you know, permeated into their culture or that particular culture or that particular village, et cetera. So it's very, very important that our women now represent as we must represent, not as white women, not as, you know, African Americans, at least in the context of representing this government in that kind of way. We've got to show our women and girls that true essence that all of us as and girls have, that only we have. And so as we proceed, we constantly say raising up the mother of civilization, just as Sister Keisha mentioned about, for right now, we're it. Now, I'm going to tell you what I've been noticing. They are trying to find something that they can at some point say is the oldest remains. They're going to try to come up with something, and it ain't going to be a black woman. And so we better be staking this claim now, because they get ready to. I've been watching very carefully about the different findings, because, you know, that's the kind of work that we do in our research. We watch things very carefully. And they have been coming up with, still hasn't matched us yet, but they looking, they definitely looking. And you know how trickery they can be.
So I'm saying, Black woman, African woman, we've got to make it clear that it is us, that we are the mother of civilization. And that's a part of what we are, you know, asserting as we engage with our sisters. This is liberating for them. Just that kind of information, that kind of insight. When you start talking to a lot of the sisters, particularly the ones that are more in the rural areas, see, a lot of these things have to be taken into consideration. The ones that are more to the cities or the more urban-like setting or so-called modern setting, they got a little more information going on. But the ones that are more in the rural areas, you would be surprised. And just like Sister Keisha mentioned, when we talked to our sister, Dr. Harrell, you know, for things to be happening right here in the U.S., in the rural areas, you would not believe it. And by the way, Dr. Harrell has now agreed to be our official genealogist so that as we proceed with the We Charge Genocide 21 and with MWM, we will have an in-house person who can assist our people in knowing their family history and being able to research it, document it, things of that nature. We're going to be working on, you know, ways, again, reparations is not just the money. There are other things that have, or writing the check, there are other things that need to happen. And so, as you all know, we're looking for land and property, but also there's other things that can happen. And so we'll be talking more with you about that for our December session later this month, about some of the other internal, as Brother Ken Bridges taught us, is a thing called internal reparations, how we deal with each other in terms of healing. And so we're going to start asserting some of those things a little more as we proceed. Okay, let's go now to another caller at 0657. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Yes.
Okay. 0657.
Peace and greetings.
Greetings to you.
Brother
Basile. Hey, Brother Basile, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, you know, just hanging in there, you know, in these strange and very interesting times that we are.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Got that right.
So much going on. So much going on. It's good to hear your voice, and I'm enjoying the show.
Good thing.
I'm enjoying the show.
So I know you heard. About Dr. Matulu.
Yes, absolutely. He's my hero, and it is wonderful and marvelous, uplifting and refreshing that the real criminals are letting him come and be with us. After they did everything that they could to kill him.
That's right. That's right. No doubt about it. I think it's been 36 years.
Yes.
36 years that he's been in.
And the real reason why he's in is because, you know, he's a master healer.
Yes.
You know, he was healing Black people on an hourly basis, not just daily, hourly basis, for literally nothing, for free.
Yeah, yes.
You know, dope addicts, prostitutes, that's the real reason why they kidnapped him 36 years ago, and they've been trying to kill him from day one.
Yeah.
So I'm very
same
you know,
thing
I'm,
with
Mumia. Same thing with Mumia. You know, we like you said, we have to stay on the case to bring Mumia home. Most definitely bring Mumia home. Mumia was very integral in my writing. Teaching me how to write many years ago in my younger years.
Yes.
Dr. Matulu Shakur, I've learned so much from I never met him, but from one of his top students who has taught me much about acupuncture detox over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I look forward to definitely going to visit Mutulu when he comes home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, you know, it is just so uplifting that the real thugs are letting him come home.
Yes.
And you know, and we have to stay on the case for Mumia until we get him home, and stay on the case for Imam Jamil.
Yes, yes.
Who I met, you know, one of my mentors, Bilal Suni Ali, introduced me to Imam Jamil just shortly before they railroaded him in Atlanta. You know, they done everything, they definitely done everything they can do to try to kill Mumia. And they definitely done everything they try to do to kill Imam Jamil. So we definitely have to stay on, you know, stay on point with our other two gems. But I went to I was at a very very beautiful program early this evening. It was a memorial tribute to Saladin Muhammad, who is a long-time
workers.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Black Workers for Social Justice. The UE Local 150, the Southern Workers Assembly. You know, he is one of the founders of the African Institute of Martial Arts. Was responsible for shutting many drug dealers down in Philadelphia back in the 70s. He transitioned on September the 19th. But they had a beautiful program for him this evening in Whitakers, North Carolina.
Okay.
Hopefully they'll upload that so, you know, so everyone can see it. But it was a very beautiful excellent program. I never knew that he was that well loved all over, not just America, but all over the world.
Oh, yeah. Caribbean,
Africa. Yes. I was very fortunate to enjoy the program and to participate and contribute to the program. So I hope they very well put together, and we're going to miss him. Because, you know, he is definitely one of our warriors, our precious gems of the Black experience, no doubt about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Brother Basile, I was remiss for our last program, and I got to say it for this one. You know, this month we also commemorate Sister Asada being liberated on November the 2nd.
Mm.
1979, she was liberated. Okay,
wow.
So I meant to mention that last Saturday,
yes.
and I did not. So I have to. And now, given the fact that Dr. Mutulu will be released very soon, now, of course, that was one of the other reasons why, you know, he was targeted, and that was his relationship with Sister Asada. And so, you know, I wanted to make sure that we mentioned that, you know, November 2nd would mark, you know, the day of her being liberated. And you know, and that's something, mm-hmm. that is a story, or not just a story, but that's history and a legacy that we really need to teach our children. Because yesterday, of course, again, 11/11 is the day that they murdered Nat Turner, right? And so, again, these are some of the stories that we must tell our children and our people. And going back to Sister Asada, when have you ever heard of, in any of our lifetimes or any other lifetime that we know of, where, you know, folks went into a prison, into a concentration camp, and actually
yes.
brought one of our people out? That right there. And I mean, that's
yes.
just not folklore. That's some real stuff right there. That's some real
that's
stuff.
Real. That is real as it gets. That
yes.
is a book and a movie.
I'm
you know,
telling you.
I can't wait.
Listen, but I'm saying I don't hear people, you know, share that kind of information the way that we really should. I mean, that's real hero and shero
right.
stuff right there.
That's
straight
real,
up.
Real.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, that right there. And so, again,
yes.
in telling and conveying those kinds of you know, activities and realities, I think that would serve to, you know, help, if not motivate and stimulate, at least to bring about, you know, some better clarity, particularly with what we're looking at today with what people talk about movement. I'm looking at this stuff and
right.
I'm going, what the hell is this? This is just weak.
Yeah, there's many charlatans on the scene that look like us.
Wow.
So you're right. Yes, but yes, someone definitely needs to do a movie on Asada, or another documentary. I know someone has done one, you know, previously, but I know they, you know, they upped their bail a few years ago from the State Department from $1 million to $2 million. It just shows you how diabolical they are. But absolutely, we love Asada, and we love Asada, and we love Asada, and we love Asada. Absolutely. She is another showing up jewel of the Black experience. And yes, more younger sisters definitely need to know about Asada, without a doubt.